If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Welcome to the long-awaited Survivor 41 premiere edition of Why Blank Lost. I'm David Bloomberg, and of course, joining me once again is my co-host, Jessica Lewis.
Here I am, and I'm excited and not excited at the same time to talk about this particular episode and the two people that lost.
Oh, so, yes.
Wait, what?
Well, hold on.
Dun, 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 dun.
What is happening?
Into the Survivor newsroom. Survivor has returned. And they brought their monster. Plus, was it Shan's grand plan? She makes her own kind of music. And Abraham, oh, damn. Not to mention Sarah, I can hardly bear to see you go. I'm Rick Devins with this Survivor News update. And I'm happy to be here with David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis on Why Abraham and Sarah Lost.
Yes! That was amazing.
What's up, everybody? How are you all?
Oh, I'm so much better now because
That's right.
Just made my night. Thank you for that, Rick.
Yes,
that was incredible.
Now, regular listeners know we rarely have guests on this podcast, but we figured the first episode of a new season in over a year was a special occasion, so we invited a very special guest.
Yes.
Yeah, I was so excited. I was surprised that you were asking for a guest. I thought I might be getting pranked, but I couldn't refuse, of course.
No, this is awesome, Rick. You are obviously a huge Survivor favorite. I loved watching you play, and I love hearing your take on the game. So the fact that you're joining us, I think this is going to add so much to our podcast today. So it's great to have you joining us.
Yes,
outstanding. Thank you, Jessica. You're always so supportive during my season, and that was very appreciated. Both of you.
You were my winner pick. Loved you.
Oh, so you're saying
it went better for me.
Yeah. It did. It went so much better for you. So I think it's funny that my winner pick is here, and my winner pick was one of the first ones to go out on this season. So this all kind of comes together, right? Because nobody ever wins when they're my winner pick. I'm sorry, Rick.
Yeah, I couldn't remember exactly who your winner pick was. Yes, you said you cursed poor Sarah.
I will say, I apologized to her when I chose her as my winner pick. I said, I'm really sorry to do this to you, Sarah. This means you are not going to win. And I just want to say, too, okay, now listen, I was looking at my notes, and I'm just going to do this now because I don't want people to think. This is what I had before, all right? When I was first, like, looking at everybody, I don't know if I can show this, all right, if you can see. So do you see where she is on my list?
Six.
Okay. She was my initial thoughts on her. I was like, not thinking so much on Sarah. I think she's going to have some trouble. I think she's not really going to integrate herself very well. And so I wasn't sold on her. And then the more I read about her and the more I thought about the season and I put everything together and I was like, wait a second, she'll slow play it. She'll like be under the radar, it'll be great, and she'll make it to the end because the game's going to move so fast and all this crap that I convinced myself of. And then look what I did. Should have stuck with my gut.
Yep. Now, I mean, people were worried about my winner pick going first.
I know.
Instead, I was right about one of my first out picks, and that would be I even got a hat in his honor.
I miss Abe.
Poor Abe.
We all do.
I know. It's crazy.
Now, I mean, I did think Brad was going to make me two for two there in first boots, but well, you know, we know, or at least soon we'll know. But you know, I think this deserves something special.
Oh, geez. really?
We'll just put this right here.
It's beautiful.
Darn.
Isn't that too bad today? So sad. Now, I was going to get some like burning sage or something because I'm clearly a witch and I have the butterfly effect and I should have been doing that during the podcast.
Yes.
This is why I didn't make any winner picks this year.
I'm not going to again.
Back. And I'm just letting Survivor happen to me. Wash I over like me.
That. I think that's good because David forces me to pick someone and I don't like having to do that. And clearly neither do the Survivor gods. They don't want me to pick a winner. And so I shouldn't be doing that.
The Survivor players all go in, God, please don't let Jessica pick.
Yes,
please,
do not. Yes. Please. And now people on Twitter are like mad at me. Like, I'm never going to listen to you again. So I'm like, you never should have in the first place. I'm very honest about the fact that I'm bad at this. I've only ever picked one winner pick. And that was a long time ago. That was JT. And that was it. Never done it again.
That
I mean,
was
like
a long time ago.
That was so long ago. So yeah, terrible. So don't ever listen to me when it comes to winner picks. And I'm not going to do it again anyway. So it doesn't matter. Anyway, yes, moving on.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. So, by the way, I did want to mention, speaking of Brad earlier, I just want to tell the two of you straight out, one of you won't be here next week.
Damn it. All right.
Man, David Rick, playing 2000 Survivor.
Rick, we're going to have to talk.
You know, I'm so glad Sarah got that iconic line.
That was
Brad
great.
Playing 2000 Survivor. That was that was so on the money.
Yes, that was perfect. But then it was also very Russell Hance as well. So that was a little more recent, but on the nose, incredible. Loved it. And I almost feel like everyone's reactions to it at the moment was so comical because it was almost like neither one could believe that he had really just said that, but he was just so like, oh yeah, no, you got like, it was like, why are you not understanding this? Of course it's going to be one of you, like, duh. And a fascinating thing to watch on television.
And you can see why that's really bad if you're Shan or Sarah. Everyone else in the tribe, it's like, let's keep Brad. Like,
I know.
I like this.
Like, this guy's not going to, he's going to, like, we know exactly what he's going to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
All right. Well, while the two of you are still both here, we can go ahead and remind everyone else why we're here, which is to answer why I was right about Abraham and Jessica was not right about Sarah. As always, we'll do that by comparing their games to rules I originally wrote, back in 2000, and have been modifying ever since, looking at all the non-spoiler information available to us from what we saw on TV, interviews, CBS All Access clips, and social media. The new updated version of the rules is available at robhasawebsite.com/blog/survivorrules. Or you can get a shorter and much more colorful version in poster form at tinyurl.com/davidrulesposter2. And I see one over you. There's right the full one. There. That's the extra large, version that you really can't order.
You can't, but I will say these look great in a frame. And I just sent two more out today. I sent three out yesterday. So keep the orders coming. I am the shipping department and I love getting the orders to send them out. So thank you so much for everyone who is ordering and supporting us. We appreciate it.
Did David Voce contact you for his yet?
He has not. Oh, so man. I am waiting anxiously to hear from David Voce, who might already have one hanging on his wall. I could be mistaken. Maybe he got one a long time ago because he's such a super fan of yours.
Yeah, Dr. David probably had it sent straight to the hospital.
Yeah. It's in the operating room.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe he follows those rules while he's operating as well.
Yes. Now, don't scheme and plot too much. Now, in addition to the poster, we have a couple other ways for people to get the rules, of course. There's T-shirt form.
Mm-hmm.
There's this other T-shirt form that I've got here. And there's mug form. And there's also sweatshirt form. So you can go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com. Click the merch link near the top. That'll take you to the RHAP shop. You can scroll through, click on like apparel or mugs, whatever. Find the different designs. Order your hearts out.
Go to Cameo, Rick Devins. I'll read you the rules out loud.
There we go. I like that. That's called synergy. Perfect. I like that.
This is good. I like this too. Yeah. Bringing it all together.
Now, before we get to the actual discussion of the rules, we usually have a few things to talk about, and that's certainly the case this week. First, I wanted to start by pointing out that it's really not fair to Yase, the yellow tribe, to have an oar that is covered by yellow netting I mean, it's no wonder they couldn't find that. The camera was pointing right at it. And I'm going, where is there an oar there?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really see it until they like circled it myself.
Yeah.
If six people on your tribe don't notice the other tribe grabbing two oars from there, sorry, I'm not shedding tears over the yellow on yellow thing. It looked like they were up there a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, like, there aren't that many ladders to climb, and you can't climb Jeff's. You might want to climb the only other one.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a fair point.
I did rewatch it. I had to because Jessica and I are used to watching a whole season to do one of these podcasts, you know, over the past year or so.
Don't remind me.
I was like, 2 hours is not enough Survivor. So I had to rewatch it.
I had to rewatch it because I was like, oh, I didn't pay attention to why so-and-so lost. So I did it for you guys.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah. I also had to rewatch it to try and figure out what the rules for all the different things that were happening, the new twists and stuff.
Oh, Lord.
You know?
And, so many.
What happened, it seemed like the other two tribes, like one person from each of them went and got those oars. And I just don't think anyone from Yase saw them. You know, just one person ran back there, grabbed it and ran, you know.
I give them a hard time, but I can so see it happening. Like our first day was on a boat just like that. Ours was a pirate ship. Mm-hmm. And as Jeff's talking to us, you see the hundreds of crew there that we got to see behind the scenes. And I mean, you're so overwhelmed. Yes. I remember the whole time I was telling myself, look for advantages, look for all this and don't jump into the water with your glasses on. You'll lose your glasses. And what do? I ended up jumping in the water way earlier than I wanted to with my glasses on and almost lost my glasses. So I could definitely be one of those people up there scrambling for a paddle and not being able to find it.
Yeah.
There is so many things happening at you at that moment, and your brain is going in so many different directions. Even something as silly as, where am I going to wear my buff? Like, that's one of the other things that, like, any future Survivor people, like, have that figured out first. Because you don't think about it until all of a sudden you're sitting, like, where am I putting this? Like, what am I doing with this thing? Because you know you're, like, being filmed and this is all happening. But, so, yes, there's a lot of things happening. So I can understand being a little bit like kind of caught up in the moment and overwhelmed with then all of a sudden this is what you have to do because you don't know what Jeff is going to tell you is happening next. It just happens and then you have to react. So I can see that.
You might be on the yellow tribe. You were searching for advantages for the first 4 minutes, assuming the rest of your tribe is going to find the paddle. And then you're going, really? I guess I'll pitch in now.
It's a good point. That's definitely a fair point.
I will say Xander, you know, when he jumped in, he got the, you know, the slow-mo grabbing his buff off of his hair, shot.
Yeah, so he knew what to do. Slow-mos were interesting. I will say, like, I get a little jealous sometimes when I watch seasons and like people have like a really awesome like shot, or it's like a far away shot, or like overhead, or like the slow-mo, and I'm like, I would love some, and I don't have hardly any of those.
Oh, you do. You have like the nice close-up of your glowing red eyes.
Yeah, that's really beautiful right there. It's a great look. I love that.
That's like my big slow-mo shot is, of course, from the intro to the season, you know, the actual intro. And that's what every fan uses when they make like a fake intro for something else. And mine is me like going down a slide and hitting my butt really hard and like bouncing and jarring myself. Like, that's actually the clip. Yeah.
I will say I do have a cool one jumping into the water like that. That is part of my intro, too. So that one's good. But it is. Yeah. I mean, like, there are certain moments where you just see that shot and you're like, damn it, that would be awesome to have.
I mean, at least you two guys got intros.
No, you know? but they didn't show them, though, which, you know, unfortunate.
Well, that's true. I mean, I was in the background of
some of Chris Underwood's great looking slow-mos early in the game. Like, he's looking like cut out of stone coming out of the water. And I'm looking like the fish trying to grab him.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Now, some other things I wanted to discuss were the various decisions the tribes and players have already needed to make. For the two tribes who had to earn their flint and choose between counting triangles and lugging water, at the moment, I thought, well, similar to David Voce, you got to go with triangle counting. You have six people all working together. If you screw up, at least you screw up together. And, you know, as opposed to the water challenge where you'd have to be separated from your tribe for crucial hours at the beginning, you know, he got roped into it and he was in a position where he couldn't really say no. But since then, I've seen all the discussion and debate about how many triangles there were. And even with 4 hours, I'm not sure a tribe of six could have come to an agreement. And by the way, the answer is 51. But I'm not sure a tribe of six could have gotten to that without coming to blows. So maybe doing water was the, you know, the sure thing. Just do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still torn on it because and I will say the editing was interesting because it appeared as if they were not going to finish, that they weren't going to complete filling the gallon mm-hmm. things with, you know, with water, and that the whole, like, let's go look for an idol instead. And so it really kind of was leading me to believe that they were not going to make it. And then they both did. So I'm curious, like, was that just all like very creative editing, or was there a shot that they couldn't have finished it? Yeah, but you
Survivor,
know what I mean?
Creative, misleading editing. Get out of town.
But that to me, I think is a frustrating component of it, because if you look at it for the reasons that you just stated, like, can six people agree to the number of triangles, and can they do that without coming to blows? I think that they probably could have, but at the same time, what would have happened if two people hadn't have completed that task? Like, what would have happened to those two people? And so each one has its potential pitfalls if you are unsuccessful. But I'm curious how unsuccessful the possibility was of not filling those, however big they were. I don't even know, the drums for the water. I don't know.
When it comes to the triangle, it's like, how many questions do we get to ask production about how we go about this? Because if you don't have very specific rules, it's like, does a line going through it make it not a triangle? You know, there's so many questions about how to approach it. And then I think it just depends on where you are in the tribe. I mean, really, if you're not one of the two most physical guys in the tribe, let's do the water thing. Yeah. Like, that doesn't affect me at all. Like, unless you're one of the, like, you know, Abraham was right on the outside of those two most physical guys, so it put him in a great spot.
Right.
It also puts it in everyone's mind, like, he's our most expendable physical guy. We can get to that later.
Well, yeah.
That's a good
point. Mm-hmm. But also, Jessica, like, you and I spent time specifically on Dr. David's beach. And we walked that route. Like, they showed you the route.
Yep.
And that is a really hard walk, even when you're not carrying water.
It is deep,
dry sand with lots of shells. So if you're wearing shoes, you get your feet filled with sand. It's miserable. If you don't, you cut your feet up really badly. Mm-hmm. So however easy it was to actually complete the task, it was a really hard, miserable thing to do for sure. Like, I think worse than it comes across as.
Yeah. And that's what I'm curious about, is that when you hear 4 hours, you're thinking that's an insane amount of time. And so this must have taken a very, so I'm wondering how much of the 4 hours was actually spent filling the drums. But we'll never know. They won't tell us.
Right. I mean, and it is interesting because, you know, there was the whole issue of Nasir seeing Danny and Deshaun idol hunting.
Yeah.
And now, one thing I wanted to bring up, I've seen on social media, some people were debating, well, instead of ratting them out, you know, tattling on them, he should have just joined them and helped to look for the idol. And then the three of them could have been together. I mean, first of all, why would you go for a 3-3 instead of what seemed to be a 4-on-2? But the other thing is, the rules said those two are not allowed to interact with any other tribe members.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter. He couldn't have done that. Now, could he and should he have kept his mouth shut, you know, till seeing if they succeeded or not? Maybe, but, you know, maybe we'll discuss that when Nasir loses, which, depending on how our predictions go, could, you know, be as early as next week.
I do want to throw in for Nasir. Like, I saw Nasir get a lot of hate for, like, going back and sharing that info, and it's like, That's what everyone does.
Oh, yeah.
When you first land on the island, if someone's idol hunting, point them
out. Tell on them.
Yes. And then everyone goes after them. Like, I thought Nasir did the, like, he wasn't lying.
Right.
So it didn't work out for him, but I thought it was the right move.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because
at least not the wrong move.
Right. I feel like if those two guys had been, like, nerdy instead of big, muscly guys, they would have instantly been targets, you know, like, if you've got two Stephen Fishbacks, you know, out there,
I thought you said nerdy, David.
Oh, sorry. I meant two big muscly guys like Stephen Fishbeck.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
A Fishbeck and a Devons out there.
Yeah. So I it was funny to see the two big guys, you know, yeah. who, you know, being tattled on for idol hunting. But then people are, or at least, you know, Sydney was like, yeah, we're not going to listen to you. But we'll deal with that, like I said, if Nasir ends up going anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another decision, lots of decisions, almost like Jeff wanted to add more decisions. Faced Danny, JD, and Xander when it came to risking their votes. Now, I probably would have gone with protecting my vote. I've seen some arguments that are somewhat persuasive for risking it. I just think in a six-person tribe, it is too dangerous to not have a vote in the first vote when I may find myself a target because I was the one who went to get something.
Yeah.
Plus, speaking of Fishbeck, how often have we actually seen the extra vote work to the person's advantage?
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That usually doesn't work out very well. But I will say, though, there was an argument that I saw that I thought was an interesting one, where if you risk your vote and everyone else does too, then you've actually eliminated the other person's ability to vote on another tribe too. So you've, if everyone decides to risk it, so you're negatively affecting people on the other tribe as well. And so there is somewhat of a benefit to that, because if they end up not having a vote, then they could potentially be in trouble on their tribe. So there is a lot of things to have to weigh in that decision. I mean, not having a vote in the first tribal council is huge, but also taking it away from somebody else is also huge. Will the extra vote come in handy later? It might, because again, if it's a small tribe, that extra vote could be everything. Because, I mean, right now you've got a tribe that you have two that have five people on it. An extra vote in a tribe of five, that could be the deciding factor.
For sure. And, you know, I obviously relate everything to my own experience mm-hmm. out there. And I think about our first vote, and it was very clear. You know, the tribal council was painful with Reem going home, because it was very like we were all set. And that was pretty early on, you know, so I would have felt more comfortable losing my vote. Mm-hmm. Plus, you have to assume when you come back, like everyone thinks you took the extra vote. Like whatever right. you did, the rest of your tribe is working under the assumption that you took it. So mm-hmm. so you're going to get punished even if you didn't do it. And then again, reflecting on my experience, when we did have that swap, if I had had one extra vote, I would not have gone to Edge of Extinction that vote. Like that,
yep.
I would have known to play it because it was a thing. So it would have made a huge difference to have it on my season. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out here. But I definitely see what, David, you're saying. Like, we started out with a bigger tribe, with six-person tribe. That vote is so much more important.
Right. Right. Yeah. So the only other thing I wanted to bring up was I wanted to give credit to Survivor Production for getting better microphones so we could actually hear the whispering at Tribal Council.
Excellent.
Instead of just seeing people and hearing, pss, 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 we could actually hear the words, and they were captioned.
Yeah. Great subtitles were huge there for sure.
That was nice. That was definitely nice. And also very early, the whispering has already begun.
Well, yes.
Then, they're trying to save themselves.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
I think it's okay if Jeff says, hey, you got to say it to the whole class. But until he says that, like, I don't care what people at home are doing. I got to save myself.
Right.
Yeah. And it's interesting that that's the dynamic now, because as Rick, you were saying, you kind of relate back to where you were. I mean, when I was on, nobody got up. I mean, it didn't start until the very next season. And that was JT was the first one that got up and caused that whole debacle at Tribal Council because he started the whispering. But that's kind of where it began, was the following season. And so I'm kind of frustrated, because I don't know how you felt, Rick, but when I was out there, I literally felt like I was glued to that spot, because production makes such a big deal about where you are sitting. And, mm-hmm. you know, like, you have to know where you're sitting. And so you kind of feel like, I can't do anything, because this is Tribal Council. Like, I just have to sit here and listen to Jeff. And so it definitely plays some head games. So I think it's great that now people don't feel that way, because they've seen it in so many seasons. And now they're like comfortable to kind of own Tribal Council instead of feeling like they have to be in a specific place and act a specific way because that's where they're at.
Yeah, it's definitely people feel a lot more freedom. I had a lot of whispering happen, I guess, on my season, but I was never part. I said stuff out loud. Like, I think whispering is a double-edged. Because if I have to say it, like, I want very clearly the people I want to understand something to understand it.
Right.
And when you're whispering, you could easily send the wrong message to the people you're working with. We see it all mm-hmm. the time. So I don't understand why people are scared to say it out loud. Like, if you want Brad to go, why don't you just say it? Because you're still going to have to go back and explain yourself. It's you think they're not going to tell Brad that he whispered in their ear, we should get rid of Brad. Like, right. So I think as a player, you should own it and just say it out loud. But I also think it wouldn't be the worst thing if Jeff said, hey, from now on, you can get up, you can do whatever you want. But if you say it, you got to say it to the whole class. Like,
yeah.
And he does call you out for whispering. But yes. Now it's just like, it would be stop, say it out loud instead of look what they're doing. You know?
Yeah. Does that bother you over there? Yeah. Are you worried about that?
Which
yeah.
again, you put a huge target on. Like, I don't think whispering is good for your personal game if you can avoid it.
Right. I don't disagree.
You raise a good point because Ricard literally whispered in everyone's ear except for Brad and Jeannie to vote Brad. If he had just said it out loud, it would have been the same exact thing.
And right. then the people he's telling at least know that he's telling everyone the same thing as opposed to he told me Brad, who knows who he told that. So, yeah, it would have been a much stronger play for Ricard. And maybe it puts the target on him right there and he goes home is the scary thing. But either way, when he gets back to camp, Brad's going to hear about it.
And
I don't think Brad's the type of guy who's going to turn it on Ricard right there at Tribal. Like, that doesn't seem like his game.
No,
because he's telling you who he thinks should go home anyway. So that would be Brad's game to do that. So Ricard could have pulled the Brad and been like, hey, Brad, actually, we're going to vote you out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Maybe so.
All right. Well, do either of you two have anything else you want to talk about before we get to Abraham and Sarah?
No, I'm just excited that we're finally back and that this is a new season, as I enjoyed revisiting the old seasons, but it's nice to see something fresh. And I will say props to CBS as well for now allowing the viewer a little bit of an insight into the actual like cameramen and people and camera women and all this production that you see. Like they're finally getting a little bit of you know, attention there. They're in the shots. And I think that's awesome because people have never seen them before. And there's a whole lot of them, as Rick was already mentioning.
Yeah,
there's a lot of them.
As the one person who hasn't seen behind the scenes up until now, I never expected there to be that many people on that boat. Plus, off the boat, off the boat. Now, I know those were probably all going to be split up to the individual tribes as things happened, but still, that's a lot of people.
And that's the thing, Dave. And it's the best crew ever. Like, they're amazing. Yeah. Every single person puts everything into their jobs and just does it so well. It's incredible. It really makes you rethink how you live and work in your own life. But it's totally different at camp. Like at camp, it's much smaller crew and they really are so good at camouflaging themselves. That's why you don't see them in shots. But every time you go to a challenge, that's how it is. Hundreds of people. And when you think about the loved ones running around the corner, they're in a tent. They have no idea what they're running around to. And they run around the corner to those hundreds. So when you see the shell shock loved ones, like just think about what they're looking at. I think, whatever you thought about all the changes, like, I think it's so great that Survivor, we missed them so badly. We wanted them to force in like a Wild West season, anything. Yes. They took their time and they didn't waste it. Like, they really did try to do something different. And I love that.
Yes.
Yeah, it was great.
All hail Mike White.
Issues. Like, they all tried to address Mike, issues.
Yeah. All hail Mike White for telling no fire tokens.
Yeah, no fire tokens.
I wish he might have said something about those dice.
Yeah. Well, you know, the six-sided dice that you don't actually roll. Yeah.
And you know what? I think it was Rob and was talking about, like, if you drop it in the, does it make a sound? I mean, do people hear that? Like, if you're in tribal council, like, do you hear the little dice going into the container? Because I think that's a dead giveaway. If that's what happens.
I think it's far enough away. Because, I mean, there were some other people saying, you know, like when JD celebrated, there were some former contestants saying, no, don't celebrate. We can see you. Not in this setup. You could see they walk upstairs And then there's a door to the left where they go into a more private.
They purposely kept it very far away. Well,
I think they also do that both for the dice, and also like it enabled a producer to slip in those extra votes for the two people. Oh,
that's true.
Mm-hmm. Ours was pretty private. Ours
was not.
And Jeff, I don't know if he did this for you, but like the very first time we went to Tribal, he's talking to you as he goes up the stairs. He stays at the same level and talks the whole time and goes in there and talks and so that you can you can hear and not hear. So
he did that with us too. Yeah.
So whatever JD did, he would be aware of what they can hear or not hear.
Yeah. Ours was very close, and it did actually come into play at one point because people were watching. You could see the person writing whoever they were voting for, and they were paying attention to how many letters did they think the person wrote down in order to decide who they voted for? So So it was definitely, it felt a little more close in the way that our voting booth was, I guess.
Oh yeah. Ours, you never would have been, you couldn't see the people once they went in. They disappeared.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Jessica over here, so jealous. You know,
there are so many things. Listen, there are so many things I'm jealous.
Oh, I know. Of, loved ones visit. I know.
I wasn't even going to go there, but that was one of them too. So, anyway, all right. So yeah. So let's talk about why Abraham and Sarah lost.
Yes. So in both of the first two votes of the season, there was a push to target someone because of how they did in the challenge. In one case, it apparently succeeded. In the other, it backfired completely. Why would it work in one case and not the other? What should Abraham have done differently? Was it really as simple as the puzzle for Sarah? What other factors, like curses, were involved? It's time to figure out why Abraham and Sarah lost.
Now we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back. We're back, so let's get back to the show.
Definitely we'll start with the first rule. I liked your evil laugh right when I said curses also. That was good.
He's got this witch thing going a little too real at this.
That's right.
Was that a cackle?
You're going to have to get evil background music. Like
I
Sam.
Should. I definitely should. I'll get a witch hat and I'll have a crow. It'll be perfect.
Yeah.
That'll be my song. Shan has a song. I'll have a song.
Mine is Darth Vader's, you know. Dun, 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 dun. So, all right. So I know Jeff Probst has said the game is being changed up, but that doesn't change the fact that the first and still most important rule is number one, and that is to scheme and plot. Both of our first out players did at least some of this, one seemingly more than the other, but both ended up with less than great connections. Starting with Abraham, from his interviews, it seemed like he was presuming that Xander and Voce were with him. And we saw some discussions between them, but it just never felt locked in. Abraham had a particular idea about keeping the tribe strong, and he seemed to believe that the other two guys would just go along with him. And of course, they probably indicated they would because they weren't Brad. Abraham told Rob in his post-game interview that he was shocked Xander wasn't with him. But it, again, just seemed like that was assumption on his part rather than specific confirmation. When Abraham said to the two other guys that he was looking at keeping the tribe strong, I liked that Voce asked, just so we're on the same page, what does that mean exactly?
Mm-hmm.
Which to me should have been a sign to Abraham that all was not unicorn and rainbows there. Because if someone you're expecting to be an ally is asking for like specific clarification, you may have a communication issue.
Yeah. And I think there was too much of an assumption on Abraham's part as to what did make a tribe strong. So I think it was a fair question for Voce to be asking, but it, yeah, should have thrown up some red flags for him, because that's a discussion that everyone has a different viewpoint, I guess, as to what means strong in a tribe. Because as we've seen, what does it normally come down to? It comes down to a puzzle. So we saw a very strong tribe end up winning that was losing at the beginning because they ended up winning the puzzle at the end. And so, you know, I do think that that is a very significant issue in this game as to what does constitute a strong player. And it's not always just physical prowess, as I think Abraham was looking at it, as opposed to mental abilities and just strategy and just playing the game in general. There's so many other components to it that need to be considered that I don't think Abraham was really putting on the table as much as physical strength.
And when Abraham is making it that clear that he's talking about physical strength, you might want to recraft your argument when Evie. Like, yes. People aren't stupid. They see a hierarchy, whether they believe it or like Evie might believe that she's the second most physical person on the tribe and she might be right, but she sees the hierarchy. Like, I thought I was a really physical dude, but I knew in my tribe where I landed. Like, you should know if you have that self-awareness. And Abraham should know that Evie knows that. And he just put a name out there so quickly. I don't know if that's going out of order. But at least in the show, he's the first person to throw a name out there.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Way before it was necessary. Way before they were heading to tribal.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, just so you know, I'll be calling her Evie. I think that's what she goes
Evie,
by.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I think she's just great. Her shirt reminds me of my best buddy, Gavin, the pineapple to lemons. So.
Yes.
That was very nice.
I mean, and that's exactly it. You know, Abraham was pushing his agenda, but Evie was actually playing the game.
Yeah.
You know, she and Liana were day one allies. And I think the two of them were the core. And then we know Liana told Tiffany about Abraham's plan. And Evie talked to Voce. And Voce said he liked Tiffany. But he said something about being concerned about how sociable she was. And then Evie later described this as Voce being 50-50 on Tiffany. What I'm surmising is that once Voce was definitely with Evie and Liana, he probably told Xander to vote the same way, or at least someone did. The reason I'm presuming it was him is because they bonded over the water task.
I think that's fair.
You know, the two of them were the ones talking to Abraham. So that's what I think happened, is the word kind of got passed down the chain there.
And I do think that it's worth noting how incredibly intelligent this tribe just kind of is as a whole. I mean, I've been impressed with the cast overall, just with how well, I mean, just well educated, the jobs that people have. I mean, they seem to be such a well-rounded group of people for so many reasons. And they all seem to be like put together so nicely. And so I really do think that it was impressive to watch them all kind of come together so early and be strategizing in the way that I don't think you see very often in Survivor seasons. And I think it's a combination of they are just very well-rounded individuals who also really want to play this game. And I think we saw all of that kind of come together with this particular tribe, because there did seem to be a lot of figuring being done and reworking of what could have been a very easy vote, right? If everyone had just said, oh, that's what Abraham wants. Okay, that's fine. We don't need to discuss it. We don't need to rock the boat. Everything's good. But instead, they were willing to play 3 days in and switch things up and turn the vote into a way that they wanted it to go as opposed to the way he wanted it to go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I totally agree. Especially, I mean, that first vote of all votes is the Sandra, anyone but me. Like, you do not want to be the first boot, obviously. And it could have, I mean, our season fell into that trap. You know, I think all the time, like, the smart thing would have been to keep Reem. David Wright and I could have teamed up with Reem and Keith and went, you know, but we just, Reem was an easy vote because it was early, and it's totally unfair to her. It falls classically into the, like, the mom vote her off because of physical reasons, like BS reasons. And they easily could have fallen into that.
Hey,
and I love the fact that, exactly like you're saying, they didn't come here to not play.
Right. Yeah, she's great.
Maybe Tiffany didn't move anyone's
laundry. That's right. She learned.
She didn't touch the clothes.
Yeah.
But she did get on the boat early, apparently.
Oh, I have thoughts about that.
Someone yelled at her to get on the boat. I don't remember who it was.
Somebody did. They're like, go in and get all the oars. Yeah. Count all the oars. That was what happened.
Maybe Liana did, who I also thought was really good this episode.
Yeah.
Everyone is. There's no one I can't say that about.
Right.
Broken record. Great.
Yeah. Now, on the other tribe, I think things seemed a bit similar, but as we've already mentioned, they went in the opposite direction, or at least that's what it seemed like. Sarah said in her interviews that it wasn't really about the puzzle failure, and she was on the bottom anyway. She said that on day one, she seemed to be with Ricard and Shan as a threesome. She told Mike Bloom, but honestly, I started to feel it slipping a little bit on day two. And then on day three was really when I was like, okay, this is bad. I really felt I struggled to get my footing. So she didn't feel like she could work with the other three because she said JD was all over the place and Brad and Jeannie were just honest and loyal and straightforward. She told Mike they kind of weren't strategizing, which I found a little bit hard. I really wanted to play and have people to bounce ideas off of. I don't mean to be talking badly about them, but they didn't want to talk strategy until after we lost the challenge. I had a confessional that didn't make it, but I was like, there's no bleeping strategy on this beach. It's driving me crazy.
Can I just say, I love the Sarah that we've seen after the game. Before, I think she was really playing it safe, which is fine. I did the same thing with all of your initial interviews. You don't want to come across too crazy or too hard. And she seemed very calm and even keel. And I was like, okay. And then afterwards, all of her exit press is like, wow. Like full on, like dropping F-bombs every fifth word. I was like, this girl's amazing. Like, I love her even more now. So yeah, I was definitely impressed to hear her take on things. And I will say that I'm curious if her philosophy on kind of withholding back on herself mm-hmm. was part of what caused her demise, that maybe we've entered it since we're entering a new era of Survivor, right? That we've come into this place where you no longer have to hide who you actually are. I mean, when I went out there, I wasn't going to tell anyone I was a lawyer because of these preconceived notions and ideas people have about lawyers. But I feel like now the game has changed so much that it might be to your benefit to be like, yeah, guess what? I went to MIT and I solved a puzzle that nobody else could solve that they were trying for years to solve. And I did it in like 9 months or whatever it was that she did. Like, she's very, very smart, but she didn't want anyone to know that. And so I'm curious if now the Survivor players that are coming on should just be very open about who they are, because I don't think you get judged the way that you used to for things like that.
I totally agree that you should be honest. I was asked all the way through interviewing, like, are you going to tell them you're a news anchor? Are you going to? And it's almost like they were surprised. And I was like, yeah, because 4 seconds after talking to me, they're going to know, like, I'm not that news anchor. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Right. And it's right. Like War Dog hid that he was a law student. It's like, okay, but we lived with him every day. He didn't hide that he was like super smart and analytical. So right. When it came out that he's a law student, you know, halfway through the game, we're all like, we're making fun of him. We're like, good, you're doing right. something and not just, you know, being the bouncer you told us you were. Like, that's great. Doesn't change how we feel about you in the game at all.
Right.
But it is interesting. I didn't read that exit press. Her saying that she didn't get to know people on a social level, but she mm-hmm. was pushing strategy decisions before they were necessary. It's like, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Maybe you should have taken that time to get to know people personally and not put out names until you had to. In the edit, anyway, she and Abraham are the first people to put out names on either of their tribes. That's probably just editing.
Right.
But.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, that's one thing she said is that she thinks Shan saw through the facade and how much she wanted to play strategically. And, you know, which caused the potential lack of trust. Well, then you had Brad going around. I mean, yes, he said Shan's name, but at least he was straightforward out in the open. No one was going to worry. Like, right. He's not going to stab you in the back. He's going to say, I have this knife and now I am going to stab you in the front, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And I, you know, the puzzle has to have something to do with it. It at least gives them an excuse.
Right. Right. But at least give Brad an excuse. Yeah.
Yeah. But Sarah's in that odd position where it's like, if, again, you just look at people and rank them physically, which I said you have to do out there, mm-hmm. like she falls towards the bottom. So then if you have the excuse of the puzzle, it's like she falls into both of those classic Survivor first vote things, unfortunately, that aren't fair. But she said she shouldn't have volunteered for the puzzle.
Right.
And she did it anyway, but she probably felt like she had to show them something.
Right. Like, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there were some things that she did right, you know, when she was talking about JD's trip with the two other guys. She said, you have to have some skepticism in the game, and she's right, mm-hmm. and I would add in life generally. And she, you know, fought to get the target off of her when she realized before tribal council that she was likely the one getting booted. The problem was so much had happened that it ended up that Shan was the one playing the pivotal role, and she was also Sarah's only hope. So it's like you're going to your executioner asking for a stay of execution.
Right. Yeah. When that momentum starts moving in that direction, mm-hmm. it's a very hard thing to stop it if you haven't got it, you know, the reins on it right away. And I think that by the time Sarah was realizing where things were, there was already so much discussion about her name. And again, as you've said, Rick, like nobody wants to be the first one voted out. And so mm-hmm. it is the anybody but me. And if everyone is talking about one person, you can feel better about yourself because you're like, all right, no one's talking about me. That's good. And you don't necessarily want to switch that target because who was the other target? It was Shan, right? So it's in Shan's best interest to say, oh, yes, no, it's Sarah. Absolutely, because Shan was the other name that got dropped. So, of course, it works out for Shan. And it wasn't until we got to tribal council that all of a sudden we were hearing Brad's name and that Brad had been discussed somewhat on the actual, you know, at camp, if you will. But who knows where that would have ended up by the time you get to tribal council. If the one name everyone is discussing is Sarah, you're a little more comfortable walking into tribal council going, OK, it's going to be Sarah because that's the one everyone seems to be mentioning. And it, I guess for Shan, it was probably the best play because she was one of the other names.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and then we get to tribal council and we already talked about the whispering. And it started with Ricard trying to convince Shan and then JD to vote out Brad. And then JD got up and told Shan he thought it was a terrible idea. And then Sarah approached them. But then she asked if they wanted her to give them space and was told yes. And in that moment, I'm like, ouch, you're in trouble now. But looking back, Sarah said in interviews that she didn't feel like she had much choice. She said, me looming over this conversation was not going to change their minds. It's just going to make me look bad. If you're the type of person who can't even let two people bleeping talk, there, no one's going to want to keep you around. It was really hard for me to balance trying to fight for my life at tribal, but also having like a little bit of foresight to be someone that people are going to want to work with later on as well. And, you know, she's right about that. But the problem is, if you don't make it past this vote, there mm-hmm. is no later in the game.
Right. That it's now or never. Right.
And it's mm-hmm. that. But yeah. it's that classic thing where she doesn't know she's the one. Like if she knew she was the one, she would have played her dice. And I empathize with her completely because this is what happened to me when I went home fourth or when I went to Edge of Extinction fourth, when I was voted out. I was positive that it was going to be me or Lauren, but I didn't know which one. And it's like, I don't want to put too much pressure on Wardog and alienate him and have mm-hmm. him go me out. I don't want to, you know, in hindsight, knowing I got voted out, like, of course I go crazy right. looking for the idol. I find an idol, but if he hasn't decided yet and I'm going crazy looking for an idol and Lauren's being cool, he's going to vote me out. So I could totally see
right.
a certain person could stand in that conversation and not go away and make it so awkward for them that they don't vote for that person. But that's one in a hundred. Most yeah. people, you really tick them off and now you've given them a reason where they don't even feel bad anymore. So right. I agree with everything she said. You know, knowing she went home, obviously she'd do it different. She better do it different. But right. in that moment, she didn't know.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, now we can move to the second rule. We've talked a little bit about it already, but it says not to scheme and plot too much and to keep your scheming secret. And here is where we see a big split in the way our first two victims of Survivor 41, Monster, handled their situations. Sarah was so wary about the behavior covered by this rule that she purposely avoided situations where she might have been seen as scheming too much. And she said in interviews she was trying to play under the radar, not spice things up pre-merge. And we talked just a second ago about how she even backed away from that live tribal discussion. So, you know, for her, I think she's clearly fine here, you know, leaning maybe a little bit too far in the opposite direction of not having schemed and plotted enough.
Yeah, I think she actually did quite well in not scheming and plotting too much because she was at least involved. She certainly was part of the conversations. She thought she had Shan and Ricard. So she was certainly doing what she needed to do to try to scheme and plot. But I do think that she ended up falling short because there was other people that were scheming and plotting a little bit better than she was. And that was Shan, really. I mean, Shan was someone who she had mm-hmm. aligned with, and Shan was kind of running circles around everybody in that camp with what she was doing. And so, you know, she in her exit press was Sarah was like, how does no one else see what's happening that Shan is doing this? Like no one else saw this, but she did. And I do think that it's all about perspective and it's all about what you're paying attention to. And if you are someone who wants to scheme and plot and wants to strategize, you, of course, are going to notice those people who are doing so much of it because that's what you want to be doing. But if you're someone like Brad, that's not his thing, right? So he's not going to be paying attention to that. He's not going to necessarily think that that's going to be a problem. And, you know, and maybe Jeannie's the same way. And so, and JD just wants to be friends with everybody, but he also wants to kind of play that social game. And so I think that Sarah found herself in a strange mix on her tribe because everyone was kind of playing their own game in a different way, but then it just all kind of centered around her and she ended up becoming targeted because it's like you got to kind of fit in with the group that you're with. And if this person's playing this way and that person's playing that way, like how do you finagle yourself to get in there to play with both of them? And she just was unable to do so.
Yeah, it's that fitting in thing that mm-hmm. when it shows the scenes from camp, it's like it shows JD and Sarah interacting. And mm-hmm. when you watch it, you're like, if I'm JD, like I would have the feeling that she doesn't really like me. Like yeah. it's on her face. Like yeah. she's mm-hmm. not embracing it. And then it shows him with Shan. And Shan just plays that person where it's like, I would have the feeling that she really likes me, like that we mm-hmm. could do this. And before you can scheme and plot effectively, like you have to have a relationship. And she just yeah. seems like maybe because she didn't like, I don't think she liked JD that much and she couldn't control it. But you have to be able to do that.
You can't have it on your face
the way she did. Yeah.
I think she thought he was scheming and plotting too much. And mm-hmm. therefore, you right. know, now. One thing about this rule that it already says is because of every possibility going on in the game, you have to blindside people. You should not give them advance notice like, you know, Brad did. But as
we
soon
talk
as
about Kalen, yeah. Kylan, Big Brother fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
As soon as the new shot in the dark twist was explained, I knew that it reinforced that very part of this rule, because if you give them a hint, they could take their shot in the dark. And right. Shan clearly figured it out right away as well, because Sarah was yeah. talking about using it and Shan reassured her. No, you don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
she did.
Yeah. Shan's
and not
great.
Only that, but it's like in the position again that Sarah thinks she's in, if she uses it and loses her vote, that might be the deciding thing. Like her yeah. vote mattered immensely.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Shan with the most obvious winner's edit in the world, so obvious that she can't possibly be the winner.
Right,
like,
right.
No one in the world doesn't think that she got the winner's edit.
Almost as obvious as your winner edit.
Yeah, right. Except episode one, it wasn't like that. You know, episode one, I was just that guy.
That's true. That's true.
But yeah, Sarah was just in that really tough position where it's like a 1 in 6 shot, but she blows right. the whole vote if
oh, yeah.
she doesn't
yeah.
get it.
Yeah.
She'd be in a much better position if she, like you said, that's why you don't tell them they're going home. Like,
right.
changes everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So now Abraham, on the other hand, so we talked about how Sarah did pretty well with the second rule. Abraham, not so much. He came in planning to play slow, but I think Jeff Probst got into his head with all the talk about being a faster pace because he kept saying... He kept saying in response to interview questions, he had to move faster because of it. He had to move faster. Like,
yeah.
like 3 questions in a row of Mike Bloom's, he would say that. And that might have been true if he'd been like the 3rd or 4th or 5th person voted out. But he was voted out on day 3, just mm-hmm. like in a normal season. That's not a justification. I'm sorry, Abraham. Now, what is at least somewhat of a justification is he told Mike Bloom, the smaller the tribe, the less places to hide. And we yes. already discussed this a little bit because it is the 6-person tribe that makes it more difficult. But the big problem was him saying on the show, I need to find a fall person. And then in interviews, he said, I need to push somebody out in front of the truck. And of course, that person was supposed to be Tiffany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that if he had kind of let things happen organically, yes. like I understand this idea that there are only 6 people and you don't want to be the person anyone's talking about. But I don't think he would have been the person that people would have been talking about. He would have been fine to just kind of sit back and let things happen, because I guarantee you it would have happened and someone else would have ended up being someone that everyone kind of agreed upon, as opposed to him throwing a name out there. Because as soon as he did that, it got everybody else thinking, and it made everybody else start worrying about their own place in the tribe, as we've discussed the effect that it had on Evie and how she saw that it would negatively affect her game and that she would eventually be targeted. So it is a very, very bad idea to think, well, because there's only six of us, I need somebody else to be at the forefront. But then you end up putting yourself at the forefront by trying to name somebody to make everyone look at that person, because instead they all start looking at you, which is exactly what happened to Abraham.
Are you reading my notes somehow? Are you?
I think I probably am, right? Like, this is the effect you've had on me. I am a witch, remember?
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm, I can see that.
Yeah, and he just put names out there way before he had to.
Yes.
So, and that automatically keeps you from being able to continue to build relationships with Tiffany. And it turned, he didn't know it at the time, but Evie and Liana, like, they're not going to continue to build relationships with him because all of a sudden he's put himself in an adversarial role when he didn't have to. And he talks so much about physicality, but it's like, you didn't get the stuff off the boat because you couldn't find a paddle. I don't remember any time during the challenge where you're looking at anyone on the tribe going, oh, they're slowing them down. Like, right. It's not like Tiffany was getting dragged over. She looked great out there.
Yeah.
So you can't just point to that with no evidence.
Yeah.
You're right. He just needed to chill.
Yeah. He was acting like he had evidence. He's like, and we talked about this a little bit already, you know, he blamed her for jumping in. But, well, first he blamed her for not gathering all the oars because one went away or something like that. And it's like, what? You never even got to the boat. What the hell's the difference?
Yeah.
But then he blamed her for jumping in. And it's like, but like we said, I don't know if it was a woman's voice. I don't know if it was Liana or Evie saying, someone jump in the water and start gathering the oars. Mm-hmm. So she did. Now, maybe right. Abraham didn't know that. But then he should have asked instead of making accusations.
Right.
And he should have asked quietly because he thought everybody, you know, it was just obvious to him that everyone would vote based on strength.
Yeah.
It was so obvious that he talked about it openly. And if he could have had some quiet conversations and been like, hey, did you see what Tiffany did? And then Liana might have said, oh, well, actually, I told her to jump in and, you know, or something like that. Quiet conversations, lock it down. Don't be out there bombastically saying it so that other people overhear you and tell your target.
And right. Or you just spell it to their face like Brad.
Yeah.
Right. It's so weird what he did. Like, when you do that thing on, if it's like our season, you do that thing on the boat, you know, you get up on the boat, Jeff asks you questions and you answer in front of people, but you're still not talking to each other. Then you do the craziness of the challenge where you're only shouting challenge things. And then it's over and you have to be quiet till you go back to the beach. So literally, they haven't talked to each other at all when Tiffany's jumping off the boat and all this stuff. I can't imagine getting back to the beach after this big thing. Like, everyone's excited to be there. And he'd be like, you see this person on the boat? We have to get rid of them. Like, I would think that was the weirdest thing in the world. Like, I was on the boat. It was havoc. What are you talking about, Abraham?
Yeah.
I mean, it makes me think he made his decision during the... Uh-oh, we lost Rick temporarily here.
Rick went away.
Oh, there he is.
He's back. There he is.
Rick, you're back.
Oh, now he's leaving.
Now he's gone. but anyway, Rick will be right back, I'm sure. The problem was that he was doing this. I feel like it wasn't just based on the challenge, but rather based on the pregame and any quarantine time that they may have had.
Oh,
together.
And that's very,
you know,
true.
I think he pre-picked out who his target was.
Yes.
And he said, aha.
14 days to sit staring at people. You make a lot of determinations about them, whether they're true or not. And a lot of those determinations are based upon people's physical appearance and what you think they will be able to do and not able to do. We have two Rick Devons.
Well, now we're back to one.
So, that was amazing.
Yeah, we used that computer for online school the last couple of weeks. So the battery was a little low.
Gotcha. Okay.
It came back on after you left. That was the funny part.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah.
It did.
Oh, well, now
it's gone, though.
What's going on? Okay.
Now it's gone. Now it's gone. But anyway, Rick is back.
So I do think that's a huge component when you've got 14 days of quarantine. I mean, I know when we sat around staring at each other for as long as we did, it certainly wasn't 14 days. And I had a lot of notes on people and made a lot of determinations about them. But to be doing that for 14 days, I think you can really convince yourself of certain things. And so maybe that was part of what Abraham fell into as well, was making determinations about if this person is on my tribe, that's someone that we need to target first. Because if your whole idea is physical ability and how strong someone's going to be, then you're kind of ticking those people off as you're looking at them, like, are they going to be good in challenges or not? So he might have fallen right into that.
Right. And going to something you said, Rick, I think, like, did we even see her messing up the challenge? I think one of the things he said was even, well, I didn't even see her in the challenge. Like, he was acting like because she wasn't doing something marvelous, that she was terrible. It's like, well, if you didn't even see her, then she obviously wasn't the one screwing up. Because when someone screws up, everybody sees that.
Right. Exactly. It's like, you know, Survivor's like football. It's like, maybe your challenge, you have one quarterback, you know, who's shooting the slingshot that gets the credit for the win. Everyone else needs to be an offensive lineman. Like, just, you're not going to show up in the highlights, but just don't screw this up for all of us.
Right, right.
And everyone on both tribes was a lineman, except for that puzzle, unfortunately, for Sarah, which, again, I went back and watched. And that's that exact type of puzzle is the one that I struggled on like crazy. That vertical puzzle, I did horrible. I thought it was the hardest thing in the world in the one individual challenge we had that. She was killing it. Like, there's no doubt in my mind they would have won if those pieces weren't in the bag.
Right, which she says Shan didn't take out of the bag.
Yeah.
Which, based on the reactions on the show, I mean, you see it on Shan's face that it was her.
Yeah.
You hear it in Sarah's voice that it wasn't her. Like, she's clearly exasperated.
Yeah.
But that's a bummer that she stepped up for the challenge and she didn't blow it. Like, she actually crushed it. But
yeah.
Survivor gets you.
So, Rick, if you can elevate your volume, I don't know. When you switch computers, I don't know if the.
Do I sound better like this?
But nope, you sounded better when you were leaning in, actually. Okay. So I don't know.
It's on here now.
Okay. All right. Sorry for that behind the scenes look, everybody.
Survivor.
We wanted to show. Yeah.
The production quality.
So, we could move on to the third rule, which tells players to be flexible, just like Rick was flexible with his computer system. When Rob asked Abraham what he did wrong, what people should do in the future to not do wrong, I guess. Abraham said, don't overthink everything, just go with the flow. And the second part, of course, goes right along with this rule. But my initial thinking was the first part was wrong. You do need to think everything through. But then he followed up by saying, well, by that he meant you can't overplan ahead of time because the situation and players in the game could be different. And with that explanation, he was right. He came into the game with his plan to keep his tribe strong, as we discussed, you know, in the preseason podcast. And he just kept saying that over and over again. And he locked it in instead of looking around and realizing not everyone might be on the same page, especially the two other women he was planning to target next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I do think that that is he certainly was lacking in the flexibility component, because it is unfortunate. A lot of people come into Survivor like with a plan and with an idea of how they want to play the game, but you do have to adjust your plan depending upon where you end up and what kind of tribe you end up on and who do you end up on that tribe with. And so you can have your idea, your kind of outline, if you will, of what you're hoping to accomplish, but then that has to fit into what you're actually provided. And I just don't think that he was able to do that. And he's now realizing that he should have done that. But at the time, he was so locked into this idea of what his tribe is supposed to look like, what it's supposed to consist of, that he just lost sight of readjusting and kind of switching it up once he realized, okay, six people, and this is what I've got. Now I need to work within the confines of what I've been given and still try to create my own plan within this group of people. And he just really set everything aside and just stuck right with his initial idea of what he needed to accomplish.
Right. He never, at least that we saw, gave the vibe that he was receptive to other people's plans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, he didn't let the game come to him at all. He was pushing the action in every conversation he was in. It was never like, what do you think? How do you feel about this? And that's, I think, the classic, like, what good Survivor players do, which is why when you watch returnee seasons, it's like, they just ask each other questions. Nobody yes. wants to answer.
Nobody says a name. Nobody exactly. says a name. They just, yeah, they keep asking. So what do you think? Well, what do you think? Yeah. No, I want to know what you think. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, you have to be flexible. Like, we knew there were going to be returnee seasons on. Like, we just did the numbers at camp, and we're like, they're going to be returnees. And they all through my preseason interviews, it's like, if they're returnees, we're getting rid of them. They're out. And then I meet David Wright, and I fall in love. And I'm like, this is clearly, like, the best fit for me to play with. Why would I get rid of this guy?
Right.
And you just have to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Abraham told Mike Bloom he was thinking, again, this shows he's locked in. You know, my name shouldn't be on the chopping block. I came to work. If you look at the challenges, I put in work there. If you look at previous Survivor episodes, the workhorse never goes first. They either want to keep the workhorses or use them as shields, so they're not noticed. But that's just not necessarily true. I mean, yeah. Yes, being obviously weak is one way to get voted out first, but so is being obviously bossy, obviously obnoxious, obviously overly schemey. You know, anything that makes you stand out in a bad way,
right.
excuse me, is a good way to get voted out first. And stridently pushing your particular narrative when others disagree, well, that describes that perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. They didn't vote you out because of how you did in the challenges, Abraham. Like, they weren't using your criteria.
Right.
That's why you went home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So moving on to Sarah, I don't know, Jessica, what did you think of how she did in terms of being flexible? Did we even see enough to know?
Well, that's the problem. I think that it came too slow. Honestly, her desire to want to be flexible was too far gone by the time she finally realized she needed to be. She was very fine with Shan and Ricard and thought that she had the numbers and thought that she was in a good place, and then didn't realize until she hit day three that suddenly she wasn't. And then she was like, now I need to start switching things up. But by then it's too late. And so I think she wanted to be, but she didn't think she needed to be. She thought that she was going to be in an okay place, but then things started happening and she started to realize that maybe I'm not in a good place, but she'd already kind of locked herself into, you know, herself with Shan and with Ricard, but not realizing that Shan was doing her own thing and Shan was playing with everybody. And Ricard was kind of a wild card, if you will, and was willing to switch things up. And she was kind of locked into this idea that it was going to be those three. And then maybe they would bring in some other people. And she actually referenced that she was bothered with herself for not venturing further out than that sooner. It was almost like too late and she couldn't do it.
She definitely put off a vibe that, like, there were people she wanted to play with and people that she didn't necessarily want to play with, and that it was way too early to cut anybody off. And it yeah. seems like, not that she cut them off, but that she didn't embrace them the way other people around her did. And I wonder what messages she's getting, because, again, when I rewatch, like, the Brad moment that stands out is, of course, him saying it's got to be Shan or Sarah. But earlier in the episode, it's he and Shan talking about, like, it's us. Like, I'm committed to you. Like, we're going to do this. And then he says to her face he might get rid of her. So who knows what he told to Sarah that might have made her feel comfortable earlier on.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the fourth rule, moving on, tells players not to let their emotions control them. And we've talked a lot about Abraham's decision. But do you think, Rick, that his emotions played a role in that or any other part of the 3 days?
I don't know. Is
that's kind of where I was.
Not emotion so much,
right.
It's just like mindset. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's kind of where I was, too. You know, it's like normally it's like, OK, well, he either did or didn't. But no, he was just he was like almost robotic in his laser focus.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think he dislikes Tiffany at all.
Right.
I don't think there was anything emotional or personal about it.
Right.
Yeah. No, I do think that his construct is what really caused an issue for him here, as opposed to and like any type of emotional knee-jerk reaction. I think he went into it thinking, I need to find the person that screwed up on the challenge, period. And like, it mm-hmm. doesn't matter who that person is, if they're going to weaken our tribe, that's the person I need to target. done. And that was what he was looking for. And that's what he thought he found in Tiffany.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, as for Sarah, you know, we've talked before about how she's smart and a good problem solver. She's seen each season 3 or 4 times. And we didn't predict anything related to this rule for her in our preview show. But I did discuss it as a potential problem for my winner pick, and generally said that players overall who have done a lot of studying up, well, I said there's a difference between knowing what to do and being able to put it into action. We've seen it before when we've had players go in saying they studied up, and when they got there, they couldn't quite pull the trigger. For example, some have gone in absolutely intending to follow Rule 4 and not allowing their emotions to control them. But then they get there and they start to make friends with their fellow players and realize it's not as easy to treat them as pawns for their own uses. And by the way, this flashback at least goes further back than the Survivor flashback from day 2 to day 1, you know.
Yeah, JD making...
One thing we didn't really see on the show, but Sarah told Mike Bloom, Ricard's name was put out there once, and I'm like, this man has an 18-month-old daughter at home who he left. I cannot vote this person out. And she continued, that was my one weakness. I'm a very empathetic person. We went through 2 weeks of quarantine and a week of pregame. This is all a dream we have. No one wants to be voted out first. I wish the nice person in my head wasn't like, oh, you can't do this to this person who's going to bleeping write your name down.
Yeah.
But it's easier said than done, and I think some people can switch it off better. I can't.
Yeah, I can still remember like how awful I felt at that first vote when I lied to the person that was getting voted out. And I mean, she looked right at me and was like, is my name getting thrown out there? And I was like, no. And then I felt terrible. I'm like, I felt so awful because that's just not the type of person I am. You know, all of a sudden you're like, here's Rachel, like coming to me going, hey, like, what's going on? Like, I'm feeling a little and I have to lie to her. And it really does hurt you inside. You're like, this doesn't feel good. But then you do also have to realize why you're all there and you are all playing this game. And that's part of the game. And so I understand exactly where Sarah is coming from, is that some people, it might just be easier to switch that on and off. But it is hard to look at someone and say, this person is a human being who has a life outside of this, has a family or whatever their situation might be on the other side. You do just have to say, you know what? I can't think about that. I have to think about what I have and what I have on the other side. And it becomes incredibly difficult to not think about those things when you're out there.
And it wasn't just that with Sarah and Ricard. Like, it's not just like he had a life and she was sympathetic. It's like, that's the only guy going to bat for you.
Yes.
That's the only person standing up for you. And it's really hard to talk yourself to stabbing that person in the back
mm-hmm.
just for a chance to stay around another day.
Yeah.
Much less if they have this great, you know, story at home that you're sympathetic to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like I think this is what caused her to get voted out, because I don't, but it did take away one of her options for pointing the target elsewhere, even though it would have been terrible. You know, she would have felt terrible doing it.
There were in interviews, we saw Sarah in tears.
Yeah.
I don't know that we ever saw her around her people in camp in tears, but you know, and I don't judge people for crying. Like, I get it, but that gets old around camp. If someone is crying a decent amount, and no one cried in our first 3 days. Everyone was still loving life, like just happy to be out there. So I'm not saying it had anything to do with it, but if there's crying going on early in the game, I'd be making eye contact with other people in the camp going, is this something we're going to have to deal with? Like, it really brings the mood down.
There's no crying in Survivor, right?
You know, I cried on Survivor. Don't get me wrong. You just have to limit it. And sometimes you have to hide away. And again, she might have done all those things. I have no evidence that she ever showed it in front of other people, you know?
Right.
All right. We can move to the fifth rule, which is about the social game and reminds players they need to pretend to be nice and also pretend not to cry. Now, Rick, I remember there was a guy on your season who had a pretty decent social game and everyone seemed to like him. Maybe you could channel him and tell us what he thinks about how these players did as far as we saw.
I think this is where both of them really lacked. And maybe it's from being in pandemic for all this time. But those first days, when you don't have to vote anyone out yet, when you haven't lost a challenge, when you don't know if you're going to have to vote against anyone in your tribe for weeks, because you might win everything. You know, you might have Joey Amazing on your tribe carrying you. They just seemed like they were way more interested in strategy than building relationships. Like, we never saw, and again, it doesn't mean it didn't happen, but we never saw Abraham having a conversation that wasn't about who to vote right out. And when we did see Sarah in conversations, we already said it, the kind of on her face, you could see who she was invested with and who she wasn't. And I imagine that people in her tribe probably saw that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think?
I think that they both reflected that similar idea in all of their exit press, that was the one thing that they were both kind of unhappy with themselves about doing, that they kind of wrote people off, or they didn't spend enough time trying to build relationships with everyone. And I think each of them are kind of reflecting on that and realizing that's a huge part of this game that I didn't think was as important. They really were, you know, I think the strategies were different for each of them, but they had their strategies that they wanted to focus on. And they didn't realize that the relationships is part of that strategy. And that becomes a key component in actually furthering your game. And someone like Shan, we saw work that beautifully, mm-hmm, because she was strategizing while building relationships and ended up saving herself and really determining the outcome. And so I do think that they're each kind of suffering that fate because they didn't realize that becomes a significant part of the game in addition to the strategy that you want to create.
Yeah. I mean, like you two, I didn't really see much from either of them, and maybe there just wasn't much to see. It was interesting and funny how Jeff called out Abraham and tribal council for talking a lot without saying anything. And, you know, Tiffany agreeing it was like a magic trick, speaking in circles. Now, Abraham didn't care because he thought the whole tribe was voting Tiffany out. But the thing is, even if that had been true, even if the vote had gone completely against Tiffany this time, he still should have paid attention. It would have been wise to address because, well, just because the person who's getting voted out is the one bringing it up, other people may think the same thing about your communication.
Mm-hmm. Right. And these are people that you're going to have to, if you are not getting voted out, you're going to have to go back and continue to have a relationship with. And so that is, it's the ripple effect in Survivor. Everything that you do is going to potentially come back and affect you later if you don't control it in some fashion. And I don't think that he was thinking long term about any of this, because the conversations he's having, he's not realizing, even though I'm telling them I want to vote out Tiffany, the effect that that's having on Evie. And, you know, and so it is something you have to be very mindful of when you're having those conversations. And he certainly wasn't. And so to kind of dismiss that when you have an opportunity to talk about it in the way that he did certainly isn't going to win you any points if you are going back to camp.
Right.
And he should have thought about it more, especially he's so mentally based on like this idea of physical tribe. He should have known that in his head of the three guys, he's considered the least physical. Like that was right, given away the second they chose the water challenge, and the two other guys are the ones doing it. It's like, you're the most expendable physical guy here. You should be building relationships for these 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem like that is what happened.
No.
Right.
No. All right, well, the sixth rule warns against being too much of a threat. And this early in the game, generally the biggest threats are either those who will be targeting you directly, or who are already, or who will cause the tribe to lose over and over again, which, you know, means you have to go back for another vote. Abraham thought he was making use of the latter, but he turned into the former. You know, people who promote the whole "we have to keep the tribe strong" thing often fail to consider what others in the tribe think. And I, Rick, I think you were the one who brought this up earlier about, like, smart players are going to say, well, wait a minute, if you're pushing this now, who's next? And, you know, that's what Evie was like, wait a minute here. And this is not new. I mean, Rob on the number one, you know, countdown podcast that Rob and company did, you know, not a week ago, but it was for a season that was 10 years ago. He discussed it on that, you know, on that podcast, that the same topic comes up with people going, well, wait a minute, if this continues, then mm-hmm, I'm going to be the next one. And so Evie recognized it. And so, you know, and it was a good read because he told Mike Bloom that Evie was, in fact, the next on his list.
Yeah.
And people need to realize that, like, Evie's not stupid. She looks and she goes, if I go with Abraham and go strength, I'm next out. If I go with this group and vote out Abraham, then maybe we will lose challenges. We can vote out the next two strong guys and then we'll
swap. She's in charge suddenly, yeah, right? Exactly. All of a sudden, she's the one running the show. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From then on, it's like winning challenges is just a bonus. It just buys you an extra week before you have to vote out the next person. But it's not going to be you.
Right, right. And that's the thing, because there were people online saying, oh, great, now what? They've gotten rid of Abraham. They're going to lose a bunch of challenges. Well, there's probably not more than two challenges before some sort of a swap or mini merge, you know, to a two tribe format. So, I mean, as you know, much as I don't want it to happen because my winner pick is one of them, like you said, they could vote out the next two guys and there's just nothing they can do about it if the three women stick together.
Right.
Or Evie could change her mind. You know, she could end up deciding later that, nah, Tiffany, you know, for whatever reason, I'm not getting along with her, or even Liana. I mean, Evie has the control much the same way, maybe not to the full extent as Shan does in the other tribe, but Evie has a lot of control in that tribe right now.
Yeah, she has complete options. All of her options are open because everyone is willing to play with her. Other than Abraham, which is now he's been voted out. So, I mean, as far as where she's sitting, she's in a great spot because she saved Tiffany. And so Tiffany is certainly going to feel some loyalty to her. And then you have the other individuals who were also willing to go along with her plan. So they've shown her that there's a willingness to work with her as well. And so she could, she's got her choice, really, if she decides that she wants to go with this person or that person. And so she's definitely in a great spot. Just because of the way that she handled that whole situation.
And everything we just said about her, we can say, I think, about Liana, too. Like, the exact same. Mm-hmm. You know, they were both in this together.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Evie got the information. Liana delivered it. They got it done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're in really... And they seem to be rolling together. Like, that's a duo. It might be a trio. It might be five. I don't know. But those two, I would like to see together. Like, they gave a good first episode, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, on the other tribe, on the flip side, we were led to believe that Sarah fell into the category of a weaker challenge person who could cause future losses. Now, we've already talked about that somewhat. I have a lot more to say about it when we get to Appendix A. But for now, I would, you know, just refer to what we said earlier about how that wasn't the real reason.
I think that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think if anything, she proved that she was really good in challenge.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't her fault that the puzzle piece wasn't there.
Right.
And then
right.
when you watch it, she was in charge of that puzzle, not Shan.
Like, oh, 100%. Yeah. Like, and then she had to find the piece. Spot. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, poor Sarah. She really did. She stepped up and she crushed it.
So the seventh rule covers idols and advantages. And there weren't any idols yet. There were certainly some advantages, one of which could have been played by either of our first two boots. Sarah said in an interview that leading up to tribal council, she planned to play the shot in the dark. But once everything was going on, it turned to a situation, Rick, like you were describing, where she worried that if she gave up her vote, it could mean that it was like two against three. And she ends up knocking herself out by giving up her vote and not pulling the 16.7% chance.
16.6666.
Repeating.
Yes.
Dr. David with his incorrect correction.
Jeez. Yeah. Yeah. Significant figures. Come on, Dr. David Voce.
Oh, my gosh.
Jeff didn't say 17.0. He said 17. I have actually had that come up at work. I have had a situation where a lawyer called me up at work on the day before. Actually, it was my day off. They called me at home, but it was about work. It was the day before a long weekend, and they said, this company is not meeting their required percentage, and they think they need to shut down. Do they need to? And I said, what are they meeting? And she said something like 94.7%. And I said, and what do they have to get? 95%. Is it 95.0? No. Then it's 95. You're fine. Leave me alone. Go on with your business.
That's amazing. You know?
And that's the same thing. 16.7 is 17.
Well, yeah. This was kind of funny when that came up during the episode, my husband was sitting there watching the show with me, and he immediately did the 16 point, you know, he did the repeating thing. And then I start laughing because I'm actually reading that on Twitter, like how this is happening. And they're like, who's going to be the first one to do it? And then my husband is sitting over here doing it. I was dying because it all kind of came together at the same time.
Yeah. And that was such a move that didn't, you know, those, that was the sort of thing we were worried that Voce would say.
Yeah.
You know, now we didn't think it would be quite that way, but it's like, ooh, don't be that guy. And you were.
Keep it on. Sometimes you just have to walk away from it. Like, it's okay. I don't need to get in here. I don't need to get involved. And I will say, though, that is, and Rick, you can probably speak to this as well. There's something about Jeff, and this was one of a conversation I had with him before I got on the show, was that for whatever reason, people feel like they need to give him stuff. And he just has this air about him and this effect on people where he'll say things and it's almost like, well, I have to respond because it's Jeff Probst. And so people say things that are not always to their benefit because they're speaking to him. And then they realize later, maybe I should have just kept my mouth shut. And I feel like this is like one of those moments you want to like prove yourself to Jeff. Like, no, no, wait, Jeff, actually, this is what it is. And it's like, that's not going to do you any favors at all.
Now, he seems like he came out there. And I actually went into this show thinking I wasn't going to love Dr. David and really did. Like,
he's great.
When he was giving his interview about the water thing, I was just like, oh, this is fun. This is so fun. But yeah, he talked to Jeff during the boat thing. Like, he seems like he went in there wanting to talk back to Jeff. Jessica, you can tell me this. Like, you do that a couple times and it's fun. You do that a lot. Like, you don't think the other people on your tribe are going to notice. They notice. And they don't
for
like
sure.
It.
Yes. Everybody
so
notices
you need to
that.
Watch it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hoping, for my own, you know, sake, that it was a situation there where we didn't see where Jeff said something like, oh, it's about 17%. Does anyone know differently? And that's when he said it and they just clipped to it to make him look more, you know, like he was volunteering.
No.
It. But I could tell by the look on both your faces that neither of you are buying that.
No.
It's like,
no.
If you're going to correct him, get it right. Like, don't correct him because he rounded and then you round. Like, that's the only, like, come
on. No, don't do that.
Yeah. That would have been funny, though. Actually, Jeff, it's 16.66666666666.
See, that would have been more of a Hubicki thing where you're like, oh, look at this guy getting it right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're going to be here for another 3 hours while I keep saying six, you know. But I have totally lost my train of thought here because of that. But I think it was just that we were talking about the advantage that had that, the shot in the dark and her giving it up. So, yeah, it was, you know, just that chance. And so she didn't want to play it because it was a greater chance in her mind that she could get herself voted out than it was that she could actually stay.
Yeah, but I do think, though, there is something to be said about that particular tribal council. And I know that we say that tribal councils aren't live and people have usually made up their minds, but it seemed clear and that there were some decisions that were still being made and that were happening in that moment. And sometimes you have to utilize that chaos to your benefit, right? And that is a moment where perhaps she should have just said, you know what? I don't know what's happening at this point because everything is so crazy and so up in the air and people might change their votes. And all of a sudden there was votes for Ricard. I mean, there was a lot of weird things that came out of that tribal council. So it might have been worth the risk just because everything seemed so crazy in that moment. And you had so many people like talking and all of a sudden things seemed to be changing that maybe there was a chance. I mean, obviously we didn't see all of it, but I do think that in that particular situation that that might be the time to actually do this when all of a sudden things are kind of being thrown for a loop and you don't know what's happening, that maybe it would have been a good idea for her just because of the type of tribal council that it was.
Yeah. I believe that if Sarah had an immunity idol, she would have played it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think she would have held it and thought, you know, maybe I'll make it through. Like, she would have played it, no doubt.
Right.
But if she goes in there thinking it's a 50-50 chance that it's her or who did she think going in? JD?
I think she thought that they might flip it against Brad.
Right.
I thought, yeah, was Brad a late addition? I thought maybe it was JD. Either way, if she thinks it's 50-50 between her and someone else, like 50-50 is better than 1-6.
Yeah.
I mean, Dr. David, you correct me on the percentages. But yeah, if I think I'm going to burn myself for a 1-6 chance, whereas I have a 50-50 chance if I don't do it. But the thing is, like, can you use it if you say out loud, like, I'm using this? Can you do something like that? But
I don't see why you couldn't.
She's just in that odd position where she doesn't want to put the target on herself. She's not sure it's there.
I think that's where the vote for Ricard came from, was in case she did use it and she drew, well, secondary target Ricard could be voted out then in case Ricard was not voting for them. Because I don't think, like, there are factions here, and I plan to get to this at some point. I don't remember when, but I think there are factions here where Shan had Sarah, Shan had Ricard, Shan had Ricard, Shan had JD, Shan had Brad and Jeannie. Mm-hmm. And with those different factions, I don't think Jeannie and Ricard were on the same page. They ended up voting, well, more or less together, or the rest of them did. But I think Jeannie was worried that Ricard was going to throw a vote someplace. And therefore, Jeannie threw a vote at Ricard, because that way, if suddenly Sarah was no longer an option, it would be a tie and everybody could go back and they could vote Ricard out.
Well, that would have been amazing. If that's what Jeannie figured out in that moment, kudos to her, because Jeannie doesn't strike me as someone who is playing the game that way. But if that was a plan going in, great. But that was such just, there were so many things happening mm-hmm. in that tribal council, and I don't feel like Jeannie was necessarily the center of a lot of it. But again, we didn't see all of it. So quite possible that maybe Shannon had a conversation with her too to say, Ricard, in case.
Right.
It's possible.
And Ricard's in a bad spot because she chose JD, who he doesn't get along with. He lost Sarah, and he went way out on a limb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So on the other tribe, of course, Abraham never would have used his shot because he was, as he said, absolutely blindsided, because he was certain it was 5-1 against Tiffany instead of 5-1 against himself. So, mm-hmm. I mean, there's really nothing to discuss when it comes to him in this case.
Nope.
So we could move to Appendix A, which is about the rest of the tribe keeping their end goals in mind when voting. And of course, we talk about the players voting out the weak, then the strong, then the weak, then the strong. Now, we've mentioned a few times that Sarah was supposedly targeted for being weak in the puzzle. And even though we've also talked about how she wasn't, but on the show it was portrayed that way. And, you know, we talked about how she said she wasn't going to volunteer for this exact reason. But again, I just want to reinforce what we've already said. She didn't blow the puzzle. Mm-hmm. I mean, she had, well, what she was saying was she had a really good lead. Shan was emptying the bags, and she was the one who eventually found that the piece was missing. She said, I noticed it right away, and everyone was like, just move on. And she's like, we're missing a piece. We need to find it. And, you know, and she said, it sucks that it's the typical, oh, she bleeped up the puzzle, she's going home. Mm-hmm. And she said she doesn't really think that's what it was. And I agree, because, I mean, we've already, you know, gotten to it. And that's why I didn't know where exactly to put this discussion in my own notes. So, you know, Shan should have been at least equally responsible. According to Sarah's description, more responsible. Mm-hmm.
According to what we saw on video, more responsible.
Video proof.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't.
Who knows what's on the cutting room floor?
Right.
What we saw on TV, like, it's Shan, not Sarah, who
set
the puzzle.
Yeah. And so, you know, it shouldn't have been the one who found the missing puzzle piece if it had just been based on the challenge. But, you know, I do think we've already seen in our discussion that she fell into the quote unquote weak category, not because of her challenge abilities, but because of where she stood in the overall tribe dynamics.
And you see it through Shan too. Like, Shan said, I'm down here because of what I did in the puzzle.
Right.
I'm up here because of my social game.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think her saying that, she knows that Sarah's social game is closer to down here.
Right.
Yeah. And I do think that this also is one of those situations where the puzzle became a really great excuse. Mm-hmm. If you're someone like Brad, who is admittedly very new to Survivor, hasn't started watching until very recently. That's kind of like the catch-all. Oh, the person who screws up the puzzle is the person we have to target, which is exactly what Brad did. And he threw those names out there and said, well, it should be one of these people because they screwed up on the challenge, and that's it. And so that is, you know, Survivor 2000. And I do think that in this situation, Shan realized very quickly, because she is not the type of player that Brad is, that I can use this to my benefit. Even though he mentioned my name, he also mentioned her name. And Brad, I think, gets along with me better, and I get along better with JD, and I get along better with Jeannie. And I do think that she was able to use that as an excuse to, let's vote. If we have to choose one, we'll choose her. So it was almost like this really nice backstory that was built into a reason to vote her out, even though it wasn't the actual reason to vote her out.
Right. And I also think, I mean, you two know better than anyone, Survivor simplifies storylines. And, you know, it's a lot easier to show they voted her out because of missing puzzle pieces than they voted her out because she did not fulfill her requirements of complex social dynamics.
That's true. But I will say, too, though, if you go into a challenge and you are adamant that you are, that you want to do something. And again, we heard Sarah say, I didn't want to volunteer for the puzzle, which means she did volunteer for the puzzle because she was kicking herself for doing so. So it's quite possible that Shan didn't volunteer and that Shan was like, well, okay, if you're going to volunteer, no, like, I'll do it. You know, it's one of those situations where, like, well, who wants to do it? And nobody volunteers. But if she was like, okay, I'll do it, then you are putting yourself out there and you're telling people I'm good at something, and then you screw up on it. I didn't want to volunteer for anything because that's what I was so worried about. I was like, I'm not going to. And we ran into that same situation in our first challenge where we had, Rachel was like adamant, I will work on the puzzle. And then the puzzle went to shit real quick. And then I'm sitting there losing my mind, and I jumped in and I took her place, and Sunday took David's place. And but it is one of those situations where when you put yourself on blast, you have to expect some backlash. And if Sarah did that, that might have been part of it too.
I was the same way. Like, you know, I had so much success late in the game with puzzles in the immunity challenges that people are like, why didn't you do it when your team was losing every challenge on the puzzle? Why didn't you step up? And I never have thought of myself as good at puzzles. Like, I wasn't hiding anything.
Right.
But it's like, I'm never going to be the worst physical person on our tribe. Like, you're never going to look and be like, Devin's is holding us back. So why would I put myself in a position where I can blow it for us if no one's asking me to do that?
Right.
But I think she was in a different spot where she needed to prove. Like, I think by that time she knew that everyone was looking at her.
Right.
She's one of the weaker girls. Like, she felt like she had to do something.
Yeah.
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was against her instincts, that she wasn't going to make it through just by not being the worst.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
All right. Well, as we've been discussing, a similar debate came up in the other tribe, pitting Abraham's view of weakness against Evie's view. And, it's repeated at this point, but Abraham was, of course, all about challenge abilities, challenge strength. And sometimes that's a legitimate way to make a decision. We've talked about that. He told Mike, she was a good target because I didn't have to think of anything. I didn't have to make up anything or create some type of adversity in the tribe. I was like, y'all saw her sitting in the boat. We were looking at the exact same thing. She was my first easy target. But there were two problems here. The first we already covered was that the others didn't agree that she was just sitting in the boat. They didn't see the same thing he saw.
Mm-hmm.
And the second was that they recognized properly that loyalty should be more important than challenge strength. And as, you know, Evie said to Liana and Xander, Tiffany will be really loyal in the game and in some ways already has viewed them as her babies.
Yeah.
You know, she's got the mom thing going on, which if she makes it far enough is, you know, that's going to be tough to overcome. But for now, it kept her in the game.
Yeah, for sure. And I do think that even though he's saying he didn't need to make something up, he did kind of make something up.
Right.
Right? So it's like he's actually doing what he said he didn't want to have to do. So I just find it interesting that it was like, again, he was trying to like force his idea of how the game was supposed to be played into his own narrative and like, okay, this is what I've decided. This is what needs to happen. And you're trying to convince people of something that they're like, wait, what? Do you know what he's talking about? I didn't see that. Like, what is going on right now? But he's very adamant that this is what transpired. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I find it funny that he's like, it was easy for me because I didn't have to make anything up. But he did.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, look at her doing nothing in the water when she could be up here on the boat doing nothing with the rest of us.
Yeah. Right. Wandering
when
around
when we've already clearly lost. Yeah. Also, you yeah. know.
Mm-hmm. And if you're Leanna and he comes up and he's like, she jumped off the boat. Can you believe that? What an idiot. Da, da, da. You're sitting there going, that was my idea. Like, you're calling me an idiot.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Appendix B talks about the jury phase. And obviously, we don't have to worry about that for some time.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's your guys' problem.
Yeah.
Now we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back. We're back, so let's get back to the show.
So with that, it's about time to wrap things up.
Can I ask you guys, this is a question that I've been wondering about. I've got my answer.
Okay.
So Sarah and Abraham, they're both on basically the exact same amount of airtime. They're both first boot after the immunity. Like, they're basically even in every way. But Abraham will always go down as the first boot just because randomly. Which would you rather be? Would you rather be Abraham? And at least you can say, I'm first boot. If there's a first boot season, you're there. You know, maybe you're remembered more. Or do you want to be Sarah? And it's like, at least I'm not first, even if it's random.
That's amazing. I would go with I want to be Sarah because I doubt they're ever going to do a first boot season. And it is, and because nobody wants to be the first boot, right? Like, that's the thing. Like, nobody wants to be that person. So at least Sarah can be like, I wasn't the first boot, arguably.
Yeah, I was wondering how they determined that. Like, did he look at the puzzle and say, well, this puzzle is done better, so you're not last place, and your puzzle over here is crap, so you're last place, and therefore you're the first boot.
That's interesting. Rick, but what's your answer?
Like, it could have been.
Yeah, I would rather be Sarah. The other thing is, you know, based on the conclusions that we're about to get to here, you know, Abraham basically engineered his own demise. Sarah, it could be argued, it contributed, but not as much. So
I'm not taking into effect gameplay at all. That position. I think I'd rather be Abraham because, you know, you're kind of lost in that. And maybe that's what you want, is to be lost, is the second out.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's why you don't choose number one. But at least it's the first boot. Like, you come up every so often. You're like,
right.
Remember, that's true. You know, that Abraham is true.
Yeah, there are.
It's like, if you mind, I'd rather, that shows you about me. I'd rather be in your minds, even as a loser.
You know what, Rick? I'm with you on that too. What am I memorable for? I picked a goddamn rock, right? And
everyone,
you know,
was thinking about you this episode, Jessica.
I know.
Yes.
Damn rocks. They came up again. They haunt my dreams. Anyway.
Some people count sheep. You have little rocks jumping over. So anyway, let's go ahead. Rick, what are your final thoughts?
I'm really excited about the season. I think that these tribes, all the castaways, are really bringing it, and I just can't wait to see what they do. The Shan winner's edit is just too obvious. I think they're Survivor South Africa-ing us, whereas this latest season, just like every episode, you thought there was a new winner's edit.
Yeah,
and people just started disappearing. I hope that's kind of what they're doing with us.
All right, Jessica.
Well, so as far as Abraham is concerned, I will say that I agree that he did kind of orchestrate his own demise. He walked into this whole game with an idea, a construct, a vision for what he wanted his Survivor to look like. And unfortunately, he doesn't control Survivor in that way. Survivor controls Survivor. Hmm. The game controls Survivor. And the people playing control Survivor.
The
and you have to play
Survivor.
The monster. That's right. You have to play with the monster in order to play the game. And because Abraham wasn't willing to do that, he found himself out of the game. You know, this is a lesson learned for anyone who's coming in to play Survivor, that there are certain things that you don't want to do. And one of them is you don't want to be the first one to drop a name. You just don't want to be, because that immediately puts a target onto you. Even though you think you're deflecting and putting the target elsewhere, you're actually not. That's not the way Survivor works. It's like that old adage, if you point your finger at someone, you've got one finger pointing forward, but there's like three fingers pointing back at you, right? I mean, and so that's what he ended up doing to himself. He made everybody look at him, and then they started reconfiguring their own games around getting him voted out to save themselves and further their own game.
Can I just build on that? Because that's so, that's so true. You know, everyone that's like you and I that goes in and doesn't want to say a name, the second he says a name, like, what do you do in all your conversations? Someone comes up and says, Devins, who do you want out? I said, I don't want to give a name. So I said, you know, Abraham said,
that's
me throwing a name out without throwing a name out.
Exactly. Like, well, so that's what he told me.
Abraham, even if I like the dude, I'm still using that. Because what else do I have?
Yes. Yeah. You're giving other people ammunition. And so he really fell right into that, which is unfortunate because that is like Survivor 101, Survivor 2000. Like, you need to, be very aware of all of those little constructs and nuances of this game. So Abraham, I think, would have been great to watch. I think he was enjoyable television, as Rick, you've said. I mean, this cast, all of them, I mean, are just really incredible people. I'm excited about the backstories. I know not everybody loves the backstory component. I, as a Survivor player, think it's awesome because you kind of want people to know more about you when they're watching you on television, because people make so many assumptions about you when they see you on TV that it's nice to have a little bit of a backstory there, right? So overall, sad to see him go. I did think he was going to be awesome television, and he was for the few days that he was there. As far as Sarah, well, we all know why she lost, and that is the butterfly effect, and that is Jessica Blaine Lewis, who's the one that caused. Yeah. I caused her demise. I chose her as my winner, and we all know that that's what happened. I wish it was that simple, but yeah. So Sarah, I really do think that she should have gone further. Clearly, I thought she was going to, because I thought she was going to be well done and that she was going to win, and she didn't. But I should have listened to my gut, which I think a lot of potential Survivor players should do the same. This is a lesson learned. Listen to your gut when you're out there playing the game. Listen to your gut when you're picking your winner. She wasn't my winner pick at the beginning, but I convinced myself, because what we heard about this game, 26 days, it's going to move fast and you got to move like this. And I didn't think she was going to do that. And really, I was right. She didn't do that. She tried to scheme a plot, but she held back. She wanted to make relationships, but she held back. She wanted people to know who she was, but she held back. So she was like a version of herself, but not all of herself. And in a game like this that is moving this quickly, you have to throw everything in order to keep yourself in the game. And she didn't do that. And so she was playing catch up too late. And unfortunately for Sarah, in addition to being my winner pick, she did not put herself out there the way that she needed to in order to keep herself in the game. So I'm sorry, Sarah, that I chose you. But I think you're awesome. So there's that. And yeah, so unfortunately for Sarah, we don't get to see her anymore. And I am sad to see her go, because she was my winner pick. But now I can relax for the rest of the season, because I don't need to worry about that anymore. Right. So I'm good.
Right.
And I want to throw one thing out for Sarah. Her final words were like, you know, I was only out here 3 days, but even then, like, I learned so much about myself. And I used to kind of roll my eyes at that as a viewer, like pre-playing. 3 days. This isn't even taking into account quarantine, the fact that you flew to Fiji, you've been out there all this time. She's living, sleeping outdoors under the stars on an island, like starving. Like, you go out and do that for a week and tell me it doesn't change your life. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that she learned things about herself, especially coming out of the pandemic, what she had with her grandmother, like all this craziness going on. I bet she still had, especially in quarantine, a lot of reflection time. So I hope she does take away a lot from it.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, after the first tribal council, Abraham said, I did not see that blind side hitting me. And well, yeah, Abraham, that's pretty much what makes it a blind side. Now, I like Abraham as a person. You know, I've got my still my I Miss Abe hat. Sorry, Sarah. I did not happen to have in my house an I Miss Sarah hat.
I need to get one of those.
Yeah.
Mine says I Miss Lucina, so I can't use it.
So anyway, yeah, I like him as a person, but he did a few things in the game that I really disliked from a strategic standpoint. And then he followed up by doing one after the game as well. Dalton Ross asked him, if you could go back and change one thing about how you played, what would it be? And Abraham gave the answer that no first boot should ever say. He said, I don't think I would change anything.
Ah, that drives me nuts.
Dude, you were voted out first. You should have changed something. Yep. Any little thing drives me crazy every time. Also, Rick.
Everyone who doesn't win should have the answer of I would change anything I could.
Yeah. But I think it goes back to Abraham's flexibility or lack thereof. He came in with a plan. He stuck to that plan. He now advises others not to do that, but he doesn't seem to see that he should have changed it. As far as we know, there was no discussion about voting out Abraham until he put the target on himself while trying to force it onto Tiffany. Maybe there was, and we just didn't see it. We'll, you know, then we'll hear about it later, and we can, you know, retroactively correct ourselves here. But it seems like he didn't even give it a chance. Talking about Tiffany as a supposedly weak link before there was any need to do so. If she was such low-hanging fruit, then he didn't need to bring in a fire truck with blaring lights and sirens to raise up the ladder so he could pick it off. He needed to sit back and let it happen, maybe make a few covert comments to see where other people stood. I really think he was probably safe if he hadn't drawn the target to himself. On the flip side, we had Sarah, who strategized early, but then figured she was good and didn't make necessary connections with the rest of the tribe while the others around her did. There were other potential targets in JD and Brad, and yes, she was one of the puzzle makers who failed in the challenge, but you shouldn't base your voting decisions on a damn puzzle piece, and the rest of the tribe, excepting maybe Brad, didn't. That just shows how good scheming works. Even as the person who arguably lost the puzzle piece, Shan still held all the cards and directed the outcome of that vote. One player tried too hard to paint the target on someone and ended up having it reflected back on him. The other didn't try hard enough, so it got stuck on her. Playing Survivor is walking a fine line. We just have to look at the first and second rules to see that. Scheme and plot, but not too much. Abraham fell on one side of the line, Sarah on the other. And that is why Abraham and Sarah lost.
Excellent.
There well we said. Well said.
Now anyone, I need to get one of these
hats at the Abraham Lincoln Museum.
I'm going to get one that says I miss Sarah.
Yeah, for the Sarah Museum.
If only John Wilkes Booth had missed Abe.
Oh, look at that.
In this town, it might be too soon. All right. Well, before we get to our predictions. Yes, predictions, Jessica.
Sorry, I'm going to be like Sarah. I'm going to start dropping F-bombs. I can't do this anymore.
Let me remind everyone that the rules we just discussed are available in mug, and t-shirt and sweatshirt and everything else. So for the shirts, mugs, go to robhasawebsite.com or robhasapodcast.com. Click on the merch link. For the poster, go to tinyurl.com/davidrulesposter2. And for Rick to read you the rules, go to Cameo and search for Rick. I don't know what you do on Cameo.
Perfect. That'll do it.
Okay. Search for Rick Devins. Not just any Rick, specific Rick.
I'm going to do a Cameo just to make you do it, Rick.
No problem.
I'm going to do it. I'm setting this up
for money.
We should set ourselves up on Cameo so people can, like, you know, they could be like, for instead of for birthdays and for anniversaries, they can call and be like, I want to send to my ex-wife or my ex-husband, you know, a Y ex-husband lost.
Oh my gosh, that would be great.
That's a beautiful idea.
this is a money making idea right here. Oh, I love this. Future divorcees, we got you. Don't worry.
Spend his money before it's split in half. That's what you do.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. Anyway, it is time for Jessica's favorite part, and that's predictions. Now, as a gesture of goodwill, and because I got one of the first boot picks right, I will go first.
Aw, how kind of you.
Yes. Rick, she almost didn't sound sincere when she said that. I don't know if you caught that.
I could read it on her face even more than we could read it on Sarah's face.
Oh, Lord, I know it's kind of a giveaway.
Yeah. All right. So here are my thoughts. I broke it down by tribe. if Yase goes back to tribal council, I don't think there's a clear person to be voted out. But we talked about earlier that it seemed like, you know, Evie had this chain and she was the one talking to Voce and Voce was probably the one talking to Xander. If that is the case, I would think Evie would prefer to keep the person to whom she has a direct connection. Mm-hmm. And that would mean Xander could be at risk. Plus, the preview has him saying you should throw out everything you know about Survivor. No, you shouldn't. I mean, I understand it's a new game. There's a monster, whatever. You still shouldn't throw out everything you know. On the flip side, Xander was sent to the risk a vote thing because they all felt they could trust him more than anyone else. And they all know he has that extra vote that could potentially help them out later. But on the flip side of the flip side, that extra vote could be seen as a threat. So I'm going to do the double flip. And my prediction is if Yase goes back, they blindside Xander. For Uwa, if they go back, we talked about the reason why already. I think Ricard could be in trouble if that vote from Jeannie was the reason that we said. Mm. Because that means that she at least considers him expendable, which obviously never a good thing. However, we also talked about there being factions there that Shan is controlling. And just because Jeannie and maybe Brad consider him expendable doesn't mean the mafia pastor does. And so since she's telling different things to different people, and this one seemed to be Sarah versus Brad, I'm going to go back to my original prediction and say it'll be Brad, even though the preview made it look like he gets himself a spy shack. And then finally, if the Love You tribe goes, I worry a lot about Nasir. He put himself into danger. We talked about it already, that it kind of backfired on him, the tattling on Danny and Deshaun. Mm. Considering the strength of those two guys, he falls into the same place that Abraham did that you were describing, Rick, the weakest of the strong guys, or at least the weakest of the guys. And I don't think that anyone will consider that voting out Nasir will weaken them. So, given all of this,
if I'm looking at Danny, I'm not worried about being a weak tribe.
Right, but. Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we all thought you were a football player. Oh, no, not me.
No, I did that. I coach a college team. Yeah, what are you talking about?
He was a walk-on at LSU. So yeah. That's a little believable. Like, that's yeah. a pretty big time
right.
program.
But so... if we have to pick one, so I've gone through one from every tribe. So I'm going to say the Love tribe goes to tribal council and Nasir is voted out next.
Look at you.
So, but I'll take partial credit if either of the other two are right.
Oh, of course you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you have a different hat next week.
Yeah.
Oh, listen, I'm not doing this. I refuse. Do you have any ideas,
Rick?
I
was looking for my sign that fell down behind the couch.
If I went tribe by tribe, I think Dr. David is gone.
No.
Because I think he's just more dangerous than Xander. Like the way they talked about Xander going to the island and they all trust him, I feel like those three women would be like, which of these two guys can we control? And they'd get rid of Dr. David and keep Xander. I think Ricard would be gone. I think he just put himself out there so much, and Shan clearly has already shown she goes with the numbers. And then I'm worried for Nasir. I fell in love with him the second he opened his mouth.
Mm.
I think Sydney has a personality that could get her in trouble. I'm going to say Sydney.
I love Rick's choices here. I do. And here's the thing that I find fascinating about a lot of the gameplay that we've seen thus far. I think it's very unpredictable because I think that everyone has it in their head. It's been pounded into their brains. This is 26 days. It's 26 days. So you're only going to have so much time to play this game, and you're not going to have enough time to just kind of wait for the game to come to you. You have to come to it. And I think that Jeff has done a very good job of instilling that. And that's why I think we've seen such quick gameplay already, especially like on the is it Yase or Yas? I don't know how you, I Yase. Don't really, Yase. Like, I really think that that's why that happened, because people have this idea in their head that they have to keep up with the game. Mm-hmm. And that's why I do think that David is going to be in trouble, because I do agree with what Rick said, that if Evie is in control, if Evie is in control, she's going to want to maintain that control. And David is someone who is clearly, I think, going to continue to come across as a very intellectual, analytical, studying the game kind of person. And I think that's going to be scary for Evie. And I think that he's in a tough spot. I don't think that Lavu is going to be going to tribal council anytime soon, just by looking at the tribes themselves. I think that they are probably the strongest physically. And we saw that in their last challenge, where they came from so far behind and still managed to get there and then still managed to do the puzzle. So they've got kind of everything. They've got the strength and they've got the brains. So
they
just make
dumb mistakes.
Right. Yeah. They do. They forgot about that damn anchor, but so I think they're going to be in a fine spot. I'm actually most concerned for Uwa, just because I feel like they are probably the weakest on a whole, as just if we're talking about just the physical strength of a tribe. But I think that Shan is the type of person that's going to look at this and feel the same way, that this game is going to be moving quickly and that we have to make decisions quickly. And who can I control and who can I not control? And that's why I do think Ricard is going to be in a tough spot, because she is going to be looking at how far can I get in this game and who's going to help me get there. And if someone like Brad is someone that she feels like is just going to be very honest and open about what he's doing, and you've got someone like Ricard who's at tribal council trying to switch the vote all of a sudden, that's going to be scary for someone like Shan. So I think Ricard is in a very tough spot. But I think it's going to be between Yase and Uwa going to tribal council. And so I think it's going to be either David or Ricard.
Okay.
And because I said it, does that mean it's going to happen?
No, I think the reverse happens. That means by you saying the Love You tribe won't go, that means it will go.
That means they're going to go. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Sorry, right. Nasir. Yeah. My fault. I did it. Give up.
Now, Jessica, remind me, this is not a setup. Like sometimes I'll say, remind me, and then it's really a setup. But how many days were you there?
30.
And Rick, how many days were you there minus the time you weren't there?
I was out there 38 days.
Okay. So 26, you guys have already won.
Listen, don't get me started on that.
Don't think that days. Every survivor that's gone more than 26 days isn't going to hold that over the winner's head.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sorry, but
then the Australian survivor people are going to be like, You wimps.
What are you American survivors talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really. You know, by day 26, I had not even found an idol.
Wow, your game hadn't begun.
No, like I think I'd won like maybe a challenge. Like everything happened late.
Yeah.
It's gonna be wild how quickly things happen out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's gonna be interesting to see.
All right. So as we wrap up, I want to encourage people to check out the RHAP patron program at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Rob has been talking about this a lot, but hey, maybe you don't listen to Rob. You only listen to us. And you should still join the patron program because it's becoming even more rewarding. There's going to be a special patron only survivor call-in show. There's going to be some early podcast releases. And, you know, once you join, you'll see that there are other ways to have fun with all the other patrons and interact. Rob has, you know, plenty of patron call-in shows. There's a weekly Q&A show with his wife, Nicole. And there's the Facebook groups with a great community of people, which is continually growing. Talk about Survivor, Big Brother, life in general. You know, it's near the end of the month, but it's also the beginning of the survivor season. The beginning of the survivor season is a great time to get in. If you, you know, want to save a few bucks, wait till October 1 and then join, because the way it works, Patreon charges you per month, even if you join on the last day of the month. So just a little money saving tip there. But in any case, go to robhasawebsite.com/patron
And once you get to the Facebook groups, make sure to say hello.
Yes. And I will say that that Facebook group, if you love Survivor, is a great group to become a part of, because the discussions are so intense and so significant. And also with Big Brother, and it's a great group. So you should definitely join. And you should also follow David and myself and Rick on Twitter. I'm at JessicaLewis89 right here. And he is at David Bloomberg. And Rick, what is your Twitter handle?
At Rick_Devins.
There you go. So you should follow all of us, because we all tweet during Survivor, a lot of live tweeting going on, commentary about the show, and then everything else that has to do with our lives. And I will say that Rick Devins' family is awesome on Twitter, all of them included, not just Rick. So you should definitely follow his entire family, because it's very entertaining. I love your family, Rick. They're amazing. Yeah.
My mother-in-law stays busy on Twitter.
Oh, yes. I love it. I think it's so awesome. It is the best.
Yeah. Yes. How many mothers-in-law have pictures of their son-in-law as, you know, on their Twitter?
And that's their Twitter handle.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, it's great. It's so great. So you should definitely follow all of us, get all the great inside skinny that we have to say about everything Survivor related and our in our lives. So I am at JessicaLewis89, at David Bloomberg, and at Rick_Devins. There we are.
Yep, right. And Jessica and I live tweet. If you want to know what Jessica's going to live tweet, just look at what I live tweet, and then she'll live tweet it a couple of
times. You don't get
later.
Credit for like typing five words faster when I have to find an image and make it that much funnier. Sometimes better tweets come with a little more time. I'm just going to say that. Okay?
Not when it's live tweeting. You got to just be on top of things.
No, you're like that news. What is it when like the news organizations, Rick, just want to like throw information at you before they fact check it?
You don't want to be first. You want to be right.
Well, I'm always right.
Thank you.
Have you not seen the sign that this was from her sweatshirt?
That's not how it works. No,
David, you're right.
Thank you, Rick.
So on Twitter, you know what? I'm going to make a call here. We're going to stop giving hashtags for individual podcasts. We're just going to go with YX Lost for everything. So
perfect.
We don't have to think too much about each individual one. People should also make sure they're subscribed to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts at robhasapodcast.com/survivor, or just go to your favorite podcatcher and punch it in and subscribe. Same for the reality TV Rehapups feed. You can get it there. There's all sorts of great content now that we're back in the season. There's, of course, the Know-It-Alls, the RHAP B&B. There's new podcasts from Taryn Armstrong and Shannon Gus, us, obviously, and, you know, much more. So definitely subscribe. You'll get everything in. You'll never have to worry about missing anything.
Excellent. And I don't know, Rick, do you want to offer up anything there's a couple of things that I think Rick has been working on as well.
Yes.
We got another podcast for everyone out there. It's not just Survivor season. It's football season and the Surviving Snyder podcast. It's a podcast I do with Entertainment Weekly's Dalton Ross and Ghost Island's Brendan Shapiro. We are all three big time Washington football fans. Which is run by the worst owner in sports, Dan Snyder. So we do the Surviving Snyder podcast, where we talk a lot of Washington football, but we also have a Survivor on almost every episode. We've talked to Kara Kay. We got T-Bird coming up this week. Rob Cesternino, of course, has been a huge supporter. He was one of our early guests, and a bunch of winners at war. We had Boston Rob, Lucina, Ben. So we talked to him about their time on Survivor. We talked to him about their favorite football teams, their history with their teams. So it's a great way to get kind of a new look at the Survivors and also talk some football. And we have the time codes in there. So if you're only there for Survivor, you can find what you want. If you're there for both, we'd love to invite you on the pain train that is being a Washington football fan.
Nice.
I mean, I might have to debate you about who the worst owner is, being a lifelong Bears fan that's owned by the McCaskies. I don't know enough about Snyder to know.
Well,
you know,
Snyder's not just a horrible owner. He's a horrible person.
Oh, okay.
Okay. The NFL made him walk away from his team recently because of his history with women. So,
Okay. Well, at least McCaskey, the main owner, Mrs. McCaskey, is like a 90-plus-year-old, seemingly very nice woman. It's just her kids and whoever else that have ruined the team. So, all right.
So with that, I want to thank you, Rick, very much for joining us here as our very special guest. Jessica, thank you, of course, for coming to, you know, help kick off or help to start kicking off the new season, to be the kickoff. And then, yeah, I don't know. Anything else?
Thank you to Scott St. Pierre for all of the incredible editing that he does on this podcast, Why Blank Lost, and all the other stuff that he does for RHAP. So thank you, Scott, for all the incredible work that you do. And thank you to Will from America for the awesome theme song that he created for Why Blank Lost. We love it. It's very catchy. You should definitely check it out. Hum it. Sing in your car. It's great. Put it on blast. So thank you to both Scott and Will for everything that you've done to support us. And thank you also, Rick, for joining us. This was so much fun. It's great to bring in another person to not only talk about Survivor, but help me with David. Because, you know, sometimes it can be a lot. So it's nice to have some backup and some support. So thank you so much for that, Rick.
It was so much fun being here. Thank you guys for inviting me. And I have a message just directly to Abraham and Sarah, because they might be listening. I mean, I think most Survivor players listen to every single podcast out there. So I'll just say, guys, most people don't have the guts to apply to Survivor.
Right.
Those who apply usually don't have the guts to follow through. You went out there. You did it. It was great. And anyone who's hating on you is peanut butter and jealous. And you should look in the mirror and just enjoy everything that came with this experience.
Absolutely. I second that wholeheartedly. Thank you for that, Rick.
All right. Oh, and by the way, speaking of, going backwards to the theme song, I would have chosen our theme song as the evil music, but it's too peppy.
It's so peppy. It's great.
It's so good. I hope they call back to that all season.
Yes. Yes. So, all right. With that, two of us will see you in a week. The other might be voted out. We'll talk to you then.
Not looking good. I'm going to the end of extinction.
Bye.
Lost survivor and you're feeling down. David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost. And this is why blank lost. Oh, baby.